This podcast contains explicit content. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to the Creepy Cannabis Podcast, where we chat all things creepy, cannabis, true crime, paranormal, and weird. I'm Madeline.
And I'm Rachel. And I completely lost all train of thought and immediately panicked.
As always happens.
I'm very tired after the 7 hours we just spent putting together a balloon arch. And
it's beautiful, though.
I want you guys to know that on Amazon right now, they're $15. In labor, you will work $300 worth of labor.
The trauma is not worth it in the end, but it's going to look great.
Now you know, and you're welcome.
The important things in life.
What are we talking about today? I completely forgot.
Well, the strain today is called Sunset Shortcake.
Not strawberry shortcake, which offends me.
Just sunset shortcake, whatever that means. And this strain is an indica dominant cross between Girl Scout cookies, which is a classic, and the scandalously named Pink Panties, which, like, Who would ever name anything? It's horrible. To be derived from Blackberry Kush.
Why not Black Panties?
I feel like all of the strains I've been doing, like, lately have been indica dominant, which is interesting. It's just very sedating and relaxing.
Is that, like, deliberate when you're purchasing them or just happenstance?
No, we get grams at cost at work, so I just buy all of them. I want to test everything.
I mean, that's fair.
That way I know. So, Girl Scout Cookies launches you to Euphoria's top floor, where body relaxation meets a time-bending cerebral space.
Should you be bending time today?
I don't think so. That seems like a lot to ask at 10:17 p.m. on a Friday.
On a Friday.
It says, a little goes a long way with this hybrid. Patients needing a strong dose of relief may look to Girl Scout Cookies for severe pain, nausea, and appetite loss. Girl Scout Cookies is a great strain.
I mean, after the day that has occurred, It is a mandatory at this point.
Yeah, and then Pink Panties is a cross. Is a cross of Burmese Kush and a Florida Kush back cross, which, like, anything good coming out of Florida is a miracle.
What did Florida ever do to you? We're sorry, Florida. We don't discriminate.
Florida man. Everyone knows.
I don't know.
What do you mean? It's like the Florida man. It's like the legend. Like, every crazy fucking news story that you've ever heard is a Florida man, and then the following sentence.
I was like, is this another strain of weed? Why am I expected to understand this?
No, you asked if anything good came out of Florida, and I was telling you no.
Oh, I thought you were talking about, like, pertaining specifically to.
It was not relating to cannabis in that short period.
Okay. The zombie Florida man. Got it. Sorry, Florida. R.I.P.
R.I.P. to Florida. Consumers can find value in Pink Panties' potent but functional sedation, which may help abate symptoms of anxiety, depression, and PTSD.
That makes sense. I need that shit.
And then blends with a strawberry shortcake. So those two strains blend with a strawberry shortcake to cultivate Sunset Shortcake.
Okay, so that's where they get it from.
Which offers the best of both worlds, an energizing sativa high grounded in a full body indica relaxation.
Full disclosure,
which sounds really nice.
Honestly, feel like a ton of difference from, like, not necessarily from strain to strain, but, like, from indica dominant versus what's the other option?
Sativa.
Like, do you really feel, like, all these differences that they're marketed for, or is it just kind of, like...
Mm-hmm. Okay. Sativa is for daytime.
But, like, okay.
I can use Sativa and go about my, like, normal life.
But, like, four different indica strains, like, can you really tell the difference between them?
Not particularly.
That's a hard head shaking.
That's why people are usually asking, like, what's the highest testing flower? Because they want, like, highest percentage of THC. Mm-hmm. And that's, like, usually what they're looking for. So this one is actually, like, 18.6% THC. The Triangle Royale was 29.
Is that the one?
Yeah.
From that episode?
Danvers? I think, yeah.
You had, like, an out-of-body experience.
Yes, that's the one. And then, so that's Triangle Royale. And then today I got garlic cookies.
That sounds disgusting.
Which I was telling you about. Yeah, but it's 36%.
You'll die.
I'll die. I can't wait to try it.
R.I.P. I'll save it for an episode. No, if you smoke that during an episode, it'll have to be one where it's one of my stories.
Yes. Yes, next week.
Maybe my next story.
And that's all for the strain of the day. So, energizing yet relaxing.
I'm energized because we're talking about possibly my favorite thing in the world.
Aliens.
Yes.
Aliens are your favorite thing in the world.
Well, I know they're real. At me. I know I'm correct. It's a fact. Oh. She came in hot.
That was loud.
Side note before you tell me about this. Mm-hmm. My favorite line in any movie, of all the millions of movies I feel like I've seen in my life, is from the movie Paul with Seth Rogen and Simon Pegg, where Seth Rogen plays an alien. And I don't know. So I don't remember the story, but it's like something like Simon Pegg and his friend like find this alien and they're trying to help it.
She's like, I don't really remember, but like here's the whole plot in detail.
But the best part is when he like has his finger out and he's like, oh no, are you going to probe our buttholes? And he's like, what do you guys think we're fucking doing harvesting farts?
It's so good because like why
what is our infatuation? I feel like this stemmed from a bunch of guys who don't want to admit that they fucking like their prostate tickled.
Yeah. Let's be honest,
like the aliens probed them so they could safely tell people they liked it.
The fragile male ego is an interesting thing.
I guess I'm thinking about that movie. Okay.
It's a great movie. Everyone should watch it.
It's called Paul. P-A-U-L.
Just Paul, yeah.
Get it. Okay.
I'm pretty sure it's on Netflix.
Probably. It should be because it's what you deserve in 2020 is to just...
I mean, Seth Rogen is just going to knock it out of the park every time.
Can I just let you know that Seth Rogen could get it any day of the week?
Any day.
He could even laugh at me with that fucking
laugh. I'm like,
laugh,
I don't even care.
And I'd be like, it's fine. You can still hit it.
He's amazing.
I love him.
He like makes ashtrays out of like clay. He like... I follow him on Instagram. He's just always making ashtrays. And I'm like, I want one.
I literally can't. Like, he is so funny.
I love him.
I love him so much. Seth Rogen, if you're out there.
The interview was truly one of the best works of art that has ever graced.
I cannot.
Honestly, when North Korea started threatening the United States because of it, I was like... dead.
That like, is you know funny what, though? As fuck. They've probably seen this fucking movie and they're pissed, but that movie was so... You could take all the political shit out
Chip
of that
Skywalk.
Movie. And it's so funny. He said Eminem is gay on our show. He was like, I feel like I've been sprinkling little breadcrumbs of gayness.
Honestly, it's a work of art. It's truly a work of art. I don't know how anyone can't love it. Same with Pineapple Express.
Pineapple Express, not even as much. Like, it's fine.
It's amazing.
But to me, the interview
but
is
yeah,
just
the
like,
interview is a work.
You could be in any type of mood, like the worst, shittiest, saltiest mood, and you put five seconds of that movie on them singing Katy Perry and the fucking.
Oh, in the tank.
In the tank. Okay. It's just, if you just appreciate it for what it is, which is a joke,
it's a satire.
It is so funny. But I mean, we're partial because we love Seth Rogen.
I mean, yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, Area 51.
Yes.
The real important things. So, Area 51, technically refers to a map location and is the popular name for a United States Air Force base at Groom Lake, which is a dry lake bed in the Nevada desert, 85 miles north of Las Vegas. So pretty close. And it's a highly classified United States Air Force facility located within the Nevada test and training range. So a lot of details.
A lot of experimental things.
A lot of United States military shit that's always a little questionable.
Because they're all hiding aliens. I mean, this is just what we know about.
They admitted that this year, but whatever. We'll get to it. A remote detachment administered by Edwards Air Force Base, the facility is officially called Homey Airport or Groom Lake, and it's named after the salt flat situated next to its airfield. Details of the facility's operations are not publicly known, shocker, but the USAF, United States Air Force, says that it's an open training range.
Okay, let me just say this, though. Mm-hmm. I do think it's good that, as people, we don't know everything. Because I do think there's certain information that
people should not
handle.
They should have tiers, though. Like, you should test into tiers.
So basically a class system. But, yes, fair. I definitely think, fair, like, certain people never have a mind. Panic mentality and just couldn't handle certain things.
Yeah.
And I also appreciate, like, not wanting your best secrets.
Well, some people don't want to know things. Yeah. Which, like,
I want to know. Like,
ignorance is bliss. It really is.
I feel like I would be dead. I would see the pearly gates of heaven, and the Lord would try to welcome me in, and I'd be like, wait, tell me about Area 51.
I need to know. Well, the facility is next to two other restricted military areas called the Nevada Test Site, where U.S. nuclear weapons were tested from the 1950s to the 1990s. So, you know, it's all kosher. There's definitely no, like, nuclear waste or radiation. Definitely, we're fine.
Mm-mm,
and the
sure.
Nevada Test and Training Range. It's a lot of tease.
Can we just say RIP to the military men and women that, like, inevitably are always the first to make contact with whatever shit they're experimenting?
We'll get to it.
Thank you, Bob, for your service.
Bob. But anyway, we'll get to it. The entire range covers more than 2.9 million acres of land. According to the U.S. military, it represents a flexible, realistic, and multidimensional battle space to conduct testing tactics developed and advanced training. Oh, development and advanced training. Okay, whatever. Someone paid someone in marketing to come up with that line.
Yeah. Sometimes you're just rattling it off and you're like, what am I even saying?
Yeah, like, what the fuck? It's like it's like when you have a word limit on your English essay and you're like...
A lot of adjectives.
Mm-hmm. In 1953, the Air Force began looking for a plane that could fly so high it could avoid detection and anti-aircraft missiles, so about 70,000 feet in the air, and travel long distances, 3,000 miles or so, without needing to refuel. And this is the 50s, it needed to carry 700 pounds worth of cameras on it that could provide good resolution of the land below, so that they can see.
So, surveillance.
Surveillance, correct. Yes, yes, yes. So, Eisenhower directed a covert program through the CIA, known as Project Aquatone, to build such an aircraft. The defense contractor Lockheed Martin designed and built one, the U-2, in just 8 months. Flight tests began at Area 51 on August 1st, 1955, and the program had a budget of around $22 million. Which in today's money would be $207 million. Casual. And such funds and presidential backing allowed engineers and others to work out many of the initial kinks.
For this one aircraft.
Yeah. So although it opened in 1955, its existence was only officially acknowledged by the CIA in August 2013.
Wait, of Area 51?
Yeah. The U.S. government did not acknowledge its existence until 2013.
I really, truly think I live under a damn rock. There's so much sometimes you'll tell me and I'm like, What?
Isn't that insane?
Because I'm like, everybody knew about it, so I just listen to this.
4 months after the CIA's disclosure, President Obama became the first U.S. president to mention Area 51 publicly, ever.
Well, that's not surprising. He's living his best life.
I mean, he was like, Area 51, y'all. Like, you need to know.
I feel like he just got into the White House and he was like, I'm fucking some state secrets up. I'm gonna tell the people about the aliens.
Actually, he was elected in 2008.
So it took him a while.
So it was a while into his presidency before he was like, all right, I'll tell you.
Maybe it was a while before he knew.
He knew. Let's be clear. They all know. Trump knows.
No, there is no way the world would allow Trump to know about the aliens. He'd be like, this motherfucker will go right on Twitter. He'd be like,
build a wall in outer space.
We're going to build a barrier in the atmosphere.
Okay. All right.
Wait. I'm just picturing him trying to create like a gas cloud that surrounds the Earth so the fucking aliens can't get in.
With hairspray, the hairspray.
He's gonna be like, we're gonna charge them a fee when they fucking enter. I think I might have huffed some of your stuff today.
R.I.P.
That's not a COVID cough, that's excitement.
Mine is always a cannabis cough. As of now. It's a very entrenched part of alien lore, Area 51. The desert base, which is entirely off limits to civilians, has long been the center of a conspiracy among alien fans and UFOologists, who are people who hunt for UFOs.
I feel like conspiracy always starts with a little bit of truth.
True. Somewhere amid Area 51's vast desert acreage, it is believed there is a heavily guarded underground lab where the government keeps and studies captured alien aircraft and possibly even aliens themselves. The belief that Area 51's military base is a cover for alien research has been fully mythologized.
Say it to me.
All right, so that's what it says here in my notes, but it doesn't sound correct. Mythologized?
We know
it's part of mythology.
It is in fact part of mythology.
Mm-hmm.
That has been weaponized by the conspiracy theorist.
Okay, anyway, in the conversation surrounding the potential for alien life in the stars, no name has been as controversial as Bob Lazar. Robert, to be clear, in my opinion, this man single-handedly convinced me that aliens are real, so I'm like... But when I was doing the research, I mean, the internet throws mad shade.
At, like, aliens?
At Bob.
Well, because people are haters.
No, because... And I'll get to it. Many institutions tried to wipe him off the map because the information that he came forward with. And so they try and claim that he has no credentials. As if he never went to the two universities, prestigious, MIT being one of them.
Oh.
And working at, I'll get to it.
Okay.
But anyway.
I'm prepared.
So, like, all of the, even his Wikipedia is, like, Bob Lazar claims he, like, you know, all those adjectives where it, like, belittles everything.
I just don't understand how an entire, like, world of people that believe in science can literally look at the amount of planets just in our solar system and really say to themselves out loud, no, we're the only ones. Like, first of all, that's a typical human conceited approach to life.
I mean, yeah, but it's amazing because, like, a lot of the claims that he's made over the years, like, things that he's told about that existed in the facility that he worked in, all the shit has, like, come to light that these are real things.
And people are still trying to discredit it.
Yeah. I'll get to it.
Okay.
So ever since he released his claims back in 1989, the scientific community has been, like, pretty divided over what to think about him. Some of his claims are pretty outlandish, and they seem impossible. Yet, as the years have gone by, there has been pretty significant vindication for most of the things that people were like, no way. Or, like, you can't prove it. He was hired in the late 1980s to reverse engineer extraterrestrial technology at a site called S4, which was actually located like a few kilometers. Oh, God. Kilometers south of Area 51. Mm. So, like, what we know of now, people would, like, clump it together as Area 51, but S4 is technically, like, a separate base.
I see.
And that's where he worked. So, on May 24th, 1989, a live interview with investigative reporter George Knapp on a Las Vegas, like, news station, Bob took the first steps toward becoming one of the most influential and controversial figures in all of UFO lore. Which, it's like, so there was a documentary that was released in 2019 on Netflix called, it's somewhere in here,
I think it's got his name in it. Like,
I think it's
Bob Lazar.
Bob Lazar, and
it's probably Bob Lazar, like Area 51. I'll Google it really quick.
It's, it's Area 51. I don't know. But it was about him, and if you watch it, it's just like, that documentary single-handedly convinced me that this man was, like, telling the truth. Because there's no reason he would lie about it. It's ruined his life. Like, why would you lie about something that, like, brings... I'll get to it.
It was, by the way, it was Bob Lazar, Area 51, and flying saucers.
Yes, that sounds correct. So in this initial interview, like on this Las Vegas news station, he asked to be like blacked out so that they couldn't see his face. And he was concealing his identity and using the pseudonym Dennis. And he said that deep within an unconfirmed section of Area 51 called S4, he'd once worked on recovered extraterrestrial spacecraft for the U.S. government. Months later, no longer concealing his identity, Lazar claimed the U.S. government was now waging an all-out covert war against him, which they were.
They were like, well, he's getting out the secrets.
They were like, get him.
Yes.
He says the government is likely behind an incident where someone shot out one of his tires and erased all his educational records from Caltech and MIT. So both universities claim he never went there. Yet, he worked as a physicist at Los Alamos Mensen Physics Facility, which now claims to never have a record of him ever working there. Like, he, as an adult, worked as a physicist at this fucking physics facility, which is actually now known as the Los Alamos Neutron Science Center. It's, like, the world's most powerful linear accelerator, and it's located in Los Alamos National Laboratory in New Mexico in Technical Area 53.
Hmm. There's a lot of Area 50s in this.
There's a lot of areas that are suspicious. Let's be honest. But, yeah, both universities say he never attended school there. Los Alamos Physics Facility says he never worked there. But there is proof of him working there because there was a news article that was written about him when he attached a literal jet engine to his Honda in the early 80s and drove it to and from work at Los Alamos Physics Facility where he worked.
How, these people have all this money to cover stuff up and they don't even try to get the loose ends.
Now, I have the article that I will read to you a portion of. It starts... Los Alamos. The custom California license plate reads, Jet, you bet. This isn't an idle boast. This car has a real jet engine in it. And the engine can move that car up to 200 miles an hour. Fucking Honda. This car already was in the family and had room to hold the engine. So with a little modification and a little outside help, a Honda became a jet car. Quote, there's no real reason except for going fast, said Bob Lazar, builder of the engine. It's going through various transitions, and it's only halfway done. Lazar, a physicist at the Los Alamos Mensen Physics Facility, said the important thing is not that the car, blah, blah, blah. It doesn't even matter from there because it literally says in this article
he worked there.
That the motherfucker was a physicist.
And I feel like if it...
And do you think they would hire him out of high school with no degrees?
No. No. And I feel like at that point, if somebody worked that hard to cover up that one facet, they're clearly, like, already anything he says has full merit, because whatever he knows is so serious that an entire company like, no, we're going to denounce that you ever worked here.
A company and both, and two educational institutions. You would think education is above corruption. It's not, obviously, but...
It is not.
But tell me, like, so there's proof, and he was also in the phone book. In that year, he was in the employee phone book. His name, his phone number, his address. Bitch, can you cover things up or can you not? You're the government.
Right? I think they think you can just cover it up by being like...
You're like, just erase, delete. They're like, delete, and then that's when the, like... They come in and a hacker comes in. They're like, I have everything you've ever done on here.
They're like, you're canceled.
Delete. So anyway, like, no one would hire this man straight out of high school. And he was actually on the Joe Rogan podcast. And, like, all you have to do is listen to this guy talk about his story. He literally gets migraines. He's so stressed out when he has to explain what happens, how what happened, what he's been through. He hates being, like, the center of attention, and anytime he gets any proceeds from, like, any of his documentaries, he donates it to science programs.
I wouldn't be donating to those shady bitches.
Like, local, local high school science programs and shit.
Oh, okay. I thought you were talking about, like, some more of these corporate fuckers.
Oh, no, no, no.
And I was like, what?
Fuck
no.
The establishment.
They're just gonna lie.
No.
About your donations.
But, like, he definitely had a degree from Caltech and MIT, and they tried to wipe this poor man off the map to discredit him, which, if you look at his Wikipedia, that's exactly what they did. It's literally like he alleges that he went to MIT and Caltech.
That's horrible.
He literally has his diplomas.
Like, can you imagine just working your off, and because you just felt like you wanted to share the truth with, like, the nation?
I mean, it's not even shocking.
Unless you say something we don't want you to say.
It's typical American government.
Like, you can say what you want right until you say something we don't want, and then we're just literally going to wipe away your... I didn't go to college, so I have nothing to lose, so fuck you. Good luck.
So one of his biggest claims was the method by which these alien ships worked and the use of an undiscovered element not on the human periodic table at the time, known as Element 115. So, essentially, he claimed that these spaceships used three anti-gravity cylinders underneath the ship that could swivel 180 or 360-degree patterns, depending on the direction. And, like, the ships, instead of flying straight, fly belly up because of the way that the gravity cylinders work and the way that they... It's hard to describe, but basically the way that it works is it goes belly up and then it can control gravity, which is something that doesn't exist in our current life. Like, humans, as we are now, we cannot recreate Element 115 in a stable version. So it's always unstable. Its half-life is too short and it basically disappears before it's usable or can be, like, tested and shit. So, at the top of the ship, he says there's, like, a reactor that's flanked by three gravity emitters. And when the spaceship is powered on, the anti-gravity wave is formed via the reactor, amplified, and then emitted from the bottom of the ship. So, the rotation of the cylinders on the bottom allows the ship to move in any direction that it wants at infinite speed, basically. Because... It essentially, like, removes the gravity directly in front of the ship so that the ship sucks forward at an immense speed.
It displaces the gravity to, like, kind of almost pull itself.
Yes. So it's, like, it almost, like, creates a magnetic effect by displacing the gravity in front of it.
Oh, also, he definitely sounds like he has no science understanding whatsoever.
This man clearly knows what he's... He's drawn pictures of the ship. You can see it if you, like, Google him. He, like, will show you the drawing of the ship that he went into and saw how it worked. Because he was working on it. He was literally hired to reverse engineer the alien spacecraft.
I don't even know why you lie about that. Like, we fucking know.
What? Who's gonna lie about that?
That's so stupid.
I don't know. I don't trust the U.S. government, so I believe this.
I don't trust
this.
Any government, but only because I know for a fact there's just
I mean,
so
he seems
we'll
to be
know.
Pretty freaking accurate. So yeah, as I said, a unique claim of his is that the typical disc-shaped UFO that's seen in science fiction flies wrong, because it usually goes belly up, with the three cylinders pointed in the direction of wherever the ship wants to fly. So, like, the cylinders inside point where the ship wants to fly, and then it affects the gravity in front of it and basically sucks the ship forward at a speed unknown to man.
If I was at a flying like this, it would just, like, go like this.
It would go, like, boop, and go, whoo.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Not that anyone can see what I just did, but it's crazy.
Believe me, it was amazing.
So, from what I was reading, the science of his claim is actually quite sound. We can't control gravity with our technology, but if we could, it would probably not look too dissimilar to what he's saying, what he's describing. But it's literally not, we're not capable of doing that. We don't have the technology.
I'm just so fascinated. I've been looking up these pictures for a second.
Of his drawings?
Yeah.
He literally introduced the world to an element like decades before it was discovered by humans, element 115. He predicted its existence back in 1989, and then Russian scientists created the element in 2004, and Swedish scientists recreated the element in 2013. But he predicted it in 1989.
You know, with all that information, yes, it's not true.
Now, it's worth noting that we don't suddenly have the ability to control gravity just because people have been able to recreate the element. There's no stable form of element 115 that exists yet. We cannot create it in a stable form. So the stable form is what powers these aircrafts. We just don't have the technological capability to recreate that at this time in human history, which is concerning.
I don't know.
That means somebody else is so far advanced.
But if you think about it, like, okay, just hear me out. I know, like, science says the world's, like, 607 billion whatever years old, but I just feel like if you look at humans as a society, like, I feel like the Earth has to be a lot younger. Like, this is just my personal opinion. I personally feel that...
But how would they be so smart so fast?
But... Think about it. Look at how space and time
are
different.
I am thinking about it.
Right? So if there's other galaxies with other planets, wouldn't it be possible that those other planets are much, much
Yeah, but
older?
Time is linear.
Yeah, but those planets could
Even
have
if there's alternate universes, they're still operating on the same time.
Not necessarily.
The same...
But those planets could be much, much older with life forms that are much more advanced. Like, the best example, if you watch the, like, the newer Star Trek movie remakes...
Okay, but then we're getting into science fiction.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, we don't know everything there is to know about space. Like, there are hieroglyphics That's that true. Have spaceships on them.
The element is not stable with our current technologies and scientific advancement, plus the Pentagon's recent videos in 2020 during a fucking pandemic that they thought they would just release to the public and be like, yeah, these are some unidentified flying objects that we have video of, and they kind of fly eerily in similar patterns to his predictions, even defying the wind and moving belly up.
I also don't know about this video, and I really think I have been...
It was literally released in the beginning when they were talking about murder hornets.
I mean, to be fair, though, I work in vet med, so all I do is work and sleep.
I was unemployed at the time, so... It was when the murder hornets were kind of coming out. The Pentagon was like, yeah, here's some video of UFOs.
With the murder hornets. Don't worry about
we're
it.
We're like, eh, here you go.
I definitely heard plenty about the murder hornets, but nothing about the UFOs.
So, like, 20 years after he predicts it, element 115 becomes a reality. I mean, obviously it's not stabilized, but it's still, like, it's been discovered.
Right.
And he predicted a hand scanner that was used at S4 that actually measured the bone density in your hand to ensure that it was really you. Because every single human has a different bone density.
That's so weird.
It's creepy. And you can see pictures of that too. He literally predicted it, like, drew it down to a T, what the scanners looked like. And in the Netflix documentary that I watched, it literally, the images of the scanners used to get inside the building match Lazar's description perfectly. And these are drawings that he did well in advance before the pictures came out to the public to, like, prove that he was correct.
Right, because he's just telling the truth.
So he actually, I'm pretty sure in the documentary, Jeremy Corbell, the filmmaker, showed him, like, the real pictures for the first time. And there's a quote from the movie that I remember, and it was, like, Bob going, I never thought I would see one of these again. And he, like, stares down at the picture forever, and it is exactly what he drew. It's literally...
I saw it.
You have to look it up. It's, like, weird, like...
lines.
It's, like, metal pieces, and it fits under each hand, and it, like, measures your bone density.
I don't even know how people... Like, I've heard two facts, and I'm like, okay, well, he's obviously telling the truth.
So this is, like, another quote right after that. I tried to explain this to people so many times, and they never believed me. There it is. It was a biometric scanner that you used to get into S4, and it measured the length of the bones... Oh, the length of the bones in your hand. So everyone, the length of everyone's bones is different.
That's...
So and the bone density. I think crazy. It's both. Which is like...
I mean, you those two facts alone, and I'm like, okay.
I'm like, you're done.
Yeah.
Sealed.
They want to cover it up. He clearly saw some state secrets. He
I'm was like, I got you, bro. I got you.
Why not just say the truth? Like, oh, he blabbed about some sensitive information. We're going to arrest him.
So the government definitely thinks he has Element 115, a stabilized version.
Oh, I see.
That he stole from
the
base.
They think he, like, stole it.
That's what they think, seeing as they continue to raid him and his businesses.
Like, he's just going to store it there.
Yeah. In the years after his initial appearance in the 80s, he basically, like, returned to a private life. He, like, did not want to be in the public. He opened a small business called United Nuclear Scientific, which is a scientific supplies and equipment store. It's all online, based out of New Mexico. And... basically, from radioactive ore to ammonium nitrate, a quick check of Lazar's scientific supply company's website reveals a business catered towards the exotic and potentially dangerous side of science. A whimsically strange something, blah, blah, blah. I wasn't supposed to copy that part. Okay, right in the middle of the production of a documentary about Bob's life, the Netflix one, United Nuclear Scientific was raided by the FBI and local police during the filming. Lazar and his followers have found this to be very suspicious. I wrote that, but yes, it's true. It's very suspicious. And have theorized that the FBI was actually attempting to recover samples of Element 115 that they think that he took from Area 51. And there's some footage in the documentary, like... where he makes Jeremy go, like, out into the woods to talk about something, and they all have to, like, turn off their electronics, take the batteries out, or, like, put them in a metal box before he'll tell them something. But it's not in the documentary what he tells them.
I feel like that's, like, a bullshit clickbait situation. Fuck you.
But I also feel like...
you're gonna tell us everything else, and you can't tell us that one thing.
If he admits that he has Element 115, they'll fucking kill him.
But why would you even admit that to the guy recording you then? You take that shit to your grave. Or you're gonna go to your grave early.
I'm pretty sure they recorded it, but the footage is, like, buried somewhere. I can't remember. It was something weird.
Like, so, I'm not telling anyone that.
Yeah. He won't. He won't. Everything that he'll admit, he would never admit. That he had Element 115. Oh, he'll go to his deathbed.
What are you gonna go, like, tell somebody in the woods then? Maybe he was just giving that guy, like, a warning or something. Like, sorry, your whole life's about to be ruined. Thanks for wanting to do this documentary.
I mean, basically the raid, which was, like, the FBI, the CIA, they were looking for receipts for some sale that they made. And
but
I'm like...
he's lying so much that the entire collective government is going to come... raid his fucking science store.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then they raided his house. Or they had a I think they had a search warrant to raid his house as well, but they didn't actually go through with that part.
For a minute.
But he was raided like, 2 times during the filming, I believe.
I wanted to know why they're so worried about, like, us, like, information getting out to us, but I don't think that's the case. I think from, like, a standpoint of, like, your military, like, you don't want other, your enemies to know, like, what you have. But, like, do you think the alien shit just landed on the fucking U.S.? Like, I'm sure it's landed other places.
The other thing is, just because they have this technology doesn't mean it's even, like,
usable.
Somebody landed within our lifetime. It could be, like, spacecraft that they recovered from various locations around the globe. Doesn't even mean that these aliens are alive today.
Yeah.
Who knows? You never know. You never fucking know.
I'm going to find out. I told you.
Because as soon as they find them, as soon as they find them, they get the special ops in there.
I'm going to ask the Lord. He's going to tell me the truth.
So in addition to having a search warrant for United Nuclear for records related to thallium sales, police also secured warrants to search his personal residence. And the filmmaker actually, like, informed Bob of this for the first time because they didn't actually do the search on his home. But he was like, yeah, I don't know if you knew, but they had a search warrant to also search your home. And he says that, like, in many of these interactions, law enforcement have questioned him specifically on Element 115. And they ask about a conversation that he had with Corbel that wasn't recorded.
Well, it's none of your business, or else I would have recorded it.
Yeah, but they're definitely, like, following him and, like, have someone with, like, the little mic that picks up sound from really far away or something. I don't know. How would they know that? How would they know what a conversation he has with someone in private?
If you're trying to remove suspicion, you should probably just not engage with him at all. Like, if you're the government and you're like, oh, he's got secrets, I want people to think he's a Looney Tune, like, you're not helping by wiping his records and stalking him. Like, if you just ignored him, people would probably be like, oh, this guy's crazy, they're not even bothering with him. Wow. But the fact that you're trying so hard to, like,
his credentials are sound.
Yeah, but, you know, all that aside, if you're trying so hard
he
to
sounds
cover
so
up,
smart when you talk when
then
you talk.
There's something to cover up. Why would you be trying so hard?
I know. It's like, can you be more obvious?
Yes. Just like maybe.
Could you try?
Don't.
Could you try? Could you make an effort?
No. We're. No.
No. So when it comes to the rumors of Area 51's connection to aliens, the rumors had been swirling long before Lazar's interview, ever since the publication of the 1980 Roswell incident. The book examined the 1947 incident in Roswell, New Mexico, when a mysterious object was covered by the media as a flying saucer, but disavowed by the military as a weather balloon, sparked mild but not wet. I don't know what the fuck that means. So, in 1994, the government ultimately revealed the object to have been a nuclear surveillance balloon, whatever the fuck that is. And
nuclear surveillance balloon?
Nuclear surveillance balloon.
Are you going to surveil an NSB? You don't like something, you're just
going to nuke us? An NSB, if you will. Tapped into the 80s zeitgeist of occult paranoia by alleging a complex government UFO cover-up. And while they didn't explicitly mention Area 51, rumors of vast, labyrinthine underground military compounds in the desert began to take shape. Whatever. But I would say definitely, like, the renewed fascination with Area 51 over the last year. Like, that whole Storm Area 51 Facebook page. That was after this documentary was released. I'm 99% sure.
Yeah. Those people.
After the documentary came out and after he was on Joe Rogan, because Joe Rogan gets, like, 10 million views easy. I mean, that's not a large portion percentage-wise, but it's a lot. 10 million views? Yeah. That's a lot. I think he gets even more than that. But
he's, like, the number one podcast, like, all the time.
When Bernie was on, it was, like, a million views in the first 24 hours. And I was like, oh, Bernie. Aww, I love him.
Angel.
He's such a sweetie.
I know.
R.I.P. also.
We can look back on a fonder time.
I just want him to be my grandpa.
Yes, he just gives off that vibe. Like, I want
he just
to
cares.
Share hot cocoa with him.
He just wants me to have health insurance.
Fucking perfect little old man.
And that's pretty much it. Like, Area 51 has really become, like, the basis for a lot of lore. But I don't know. I think there's some real truths behind the lore.
I think it's a pretty cut and dry. They have alien paraphernalia from somewhere, sometime.
Possession of paraphernalia is an offense.
Mm-hmm. I'm
a federal offense.
And he knows, and he spilled the beans. I don't know that they're, like, rolling around in new stuff, like you said.
So I didn't include it in my notes, but I remember from the documentary, he literally, while he was working, my notes, like, weren't even that detailed. Like, while he was working, first he worked at this physicist's place, and then he was basically recruited to work at S4. So essentially he was, like, recruited, and they were like, yeah, you're just gonna, like, be a physicist and do some shit. And he was like, cool. And he basically, like, would fly in a plane from Las Vegas into the middle of goddamn nowhere at S4, and work for, like, 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off, and, like, just reverse engineer alien spacecraft. But they basically, like, introduced it slowly over time and, like, had him read all these documents about how it worked, but only provided him with enough information for him to do his exact job. Nothing more. Nothing less.
So did he ever disclose how he found out, you know, what he was doing? If they were, like, just disclosing, like...
Well, yeah. Yeah, basically, like, after a while, eventually, they were like, okay, so here's the spaceship you're going to be working on.
And then he
figure
was like,
it out. Mm-hmm. And he was literally, his whole goal and his job was to figure out how the spaceship flew, how it worked, and make it so that the U.S. government can use that technology to defeat its enemies.
I mean, I can see that. Like, if I had a cool toy, I'd be like...
Like, that was their goal. They were like, we need this.
Yes. And he was like...
To win.
You're not getting it. I am, however, going to tell...
Well, they just can't synthesize element 115, and that's what they need.
Yeah.
So, at one point, he describes, like... walking through part of the facility, and he looked into this, like, wing, like an air, like, you know, like where,
like,
you know, in like superhero movies where there's like an airplane wing in the side of a mountain. It's just like,
oh yeah,
like a big ass room with, like, a lot of planes in it.
I think it's called a hangar, like an airplane
hangar.
Yeah.
Yes, he was looking into this hangar, and he said there were probably about 9 different spacecraft. He said they were shaped differently. Each one, like, was a little unique.
That's kind of weird to me.
But he went into one of them, and the seat was made for a human child size. And he was like, well, that's fucking weird. Why would the U.S. government be creating aircraft that has seating for the size of a human child inside?
Yeah.
To drive it.
Did he ever say, like, but he never said anything about seeing physical aliens, just the spacecraft?
Now, I watched the documentary last year. I believe at a very minimum he saw renderings or photographs. Sorry, I need to
a comfortable position.
Fix my seating. He at least had seen photographs, because he described what they look like. Which is like a typical, it's like Paul.
I just also, like, I don't feel like aliens, like, in my mind, I feel like it's just other people on other planets.
I mean, they could look just like us.
Yeah.
But be better.
I just feel like it's, I guess I shouldn't say, I feel like
it's just extraterrestrial.
We're the only, like, human life forms in the entire fucking galaxy.
That would be so weird.
It would be so weird.
Wouldn't that be weird?
And you can tell me it's science fiction all day long, like. I was going to say earlier, in the new Star Trek movie, like, one of them, like, the second one, I think, with mm-hmm. Chris Pine, it was a really cool scene, because they had to go, like, they would travel throughout space and different planets and whatever, do things, and they had to go to this planet that was really, really young, and they had to stop this volcano from, like, killing the planet, but in no way were they, like, allowed to interact with the life forms, because they were a super, super, super young planet, mm-hmm. and they still, like, worshipped, like, nature or whatever. They didn't, like, know anything about technology,
mm-hmm.
and they fuck up, spoiler alert, and then the people, like, stop worshiping the god they're worshiping and start worshiping their ship. And I was like, I feel like that's, like,
we're in uncharted territory.
Yeah, they were like, oh fuck, and then the people all start, like, running and bowing to their ship. But I just, yeah, there's just no way we're the only life form.
No, fuck but, you. Okay, lying. But the other thing is, like, so while Bob was working at S4, basically this was back in a time before Area 1 became probably 2.5 million miles.
Yeah.
Back when it was, like, more tight into the facilities. And I'm pretty sure it's because of Bob that they bought all of those extra miles of land, because basically while he was working there, he knew that Wednesday evenings are when they performed the test drives of the alien spacecraft every Wednesday night, because statistically it was the night that was least traveled in the evenings, so less people were likely to see the spacecraft from the Nevada highway nearby. So apparently not only did he go to witness the spacecraft flying testing, he brought friends that had no relation to the job, just like personal friends,
and they just let him
no, they were sneaking through the desert up to the edge of a fence and like watching these tests.
Did any of these friends ever come forward, like in his
yeah they admit or? That they saw something that night, and he has footage, but it's like a 1980s video camera, so it's like bullshit quality because it's a 1980s video camera, and it was at night. And but you can see, like, it's in the documentary, the footage that he got.
I have to watch it now.
It's fascinating. And I'm like, that's questionable.
At best.
At best.
I mean, everyone will make up their own mind.
Like, everyone that he brought up there to see these test drives admits that they saw something.
Yeah. I just, you can say whatever you want. You can call me whatever you want. I believe it. I know it's true.
I've just always been fascinated, like, the hundreds of other employees working at these facilities that will never come forward.
Clearly. Well, no, because they value their
Well, yeah, careers. They did try and murder Bob numerous times. Oh. But then he revealed his identity, and because he revealed his identity, it became harder to murder him, because he was like, they're trying to kill me.
Oh, shoot.
And then it was like
sad for them,
but yeah, they did ruin his life for show. For show,
yeah. People don't want that. You have families and stuff to think about, and some people probably such really, a nice like, guy. Enjoy the science and are like, "Fuck it, we'll just live like."
He literally just loves science. That's why he has this fucking online store where he just sells like science fun shit. Elements to do science shit. Like, he's like Bill Nye the Science Guy.
It's sad, but at the same time, like, he had to know. That's spilling these secrets.
Oh, absolutely. But he literally, in his initial interview, like, they show the footage of the initial interview, like, where his face is covered and they're concealing his identity. He's like, yeah, I feel like I have an obligation to the American people to tell them what's going on. It's unacceptable that the United States government can have this kind of information and not share it with the public.
Yeah. I get what he's saying for sure, and I never want to side with, like, less information, but I do, like I said in the beginning, I do feel like if we knew every time our country was close to being attacked, or every terrible thing that was about to happen, or every secret they had, like, you'd live in fear all the time. You know, yeah. I couldn't
in New York City, the Port Authority actually has a tracker. It's like a countdown, except it counts up to the number of attempted terrorist attacks in New York every day.
Yeah, it's like, you don't need, we went on vacation, they don't tell you that, ago, and one of the girls, there was a random group of girls that was staying where we were staying, and one of them works for wherever they have like the fucking doomsday clock, like, mm-hmm. legit. And she was telling us about how in like a nuclear strike, all these poles come out of the ground, and that's like where these secret bunkers are for like the government to rich people to, like,
rich
go.
People,
yeah,
have bunkers.
Oh, she said, guaranteed. She said, no. She was like, if it ever happens, like, in your lifetime, she said, all these poles will come out of the ground, and that's where you need to go.
Anyone who's seen American Horror Story Apocalypse,
I've seen part of it,
knows exactly how it goes down. As long as you see the first episode, you know how it goes down. The rich people get on jets, and they fly to their bunkers, and the rest of the world dies in anguish and
pain.
But you
know what? I'm like, it's fine. It'll be anguishing and terrible, but good luck starving to death when all the fucking crops are
I know,
when
they have to eat those jelly cubes, I'm like, ha, ha, ha.
That's what you get.
I'd rather just die, honestly.
Literally, yes.
Seems like torture.
Yeah. Sometimes, like, you're just not meant to survive something. Mm-mm. And we all gotta die sometime. If an apocalypse comes, like, we quick both and fast would be great. We're just gonna die of fright.
Oh, I would die of fright.
So we're not gonna have to worry about it.
I would die of fright just for
instantaneously
sure.
dropping dead. Well, anxiety. I'll watch the documentary. I don't want to say what I'm going to do my episode on because I'm not 100% sure.
That's fine.
I think I know, and we talked about it, but all I know is that I don't know.
And that's all that matters.
Well, it's been very enlightening as huge.
As huge.
As per huge.
Okay, thanks for listening.
Bye.